Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
What up, though?
All right, well, we have the abbreviated intro, and we do indeed have a guest on this episode of the podcast. We have Ty Windisch of the Eurostep Podcast and the Eurostep Podcast Network. Ty, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Very excited to be on the show, as I joked with you guys before we started recording. A little hesitant to dive into a bunch of Bucks talk, given the way they've been playing. I got Nikias talking Eagles before we started, but no, I'm kidding. I'm ready. I'm excited. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. We're going to have some fun. Hopefully I have some fun on Sunday watching the Eagles, but we'll lead that conversation off the air. Ty, before we dig into the Bucks talk, you know, as I mentioned, co-host of the Eurostep Podcast, but also the Eurostep Podcast Network. How did it transition from the pod to the network?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it can be a little confusing when you actually look at the pod. So Rohan and I still host the Eurostep weekly or more Bucks podcast, but we actually added Brewers and Packers coverage to our network and a second Bucks podcast to that main Bucks feed. So we've got all the pro Wisconsin teams covered now. Hoping to add a WNBA one, or we'd probably just do it on our pod, but in the next couple of years here. But yeah, that is the change. But the Eurostep podcast, still the one that I am on the most, talking all things Bucks once or usually twice or more per week.
Got you. All right. Let's dig into some Bucks talk. As you mentioned, not the best start to the season for the Milwaukee Bucks. Currently 1-4. They're 14th in the East. 0-1 at home, 1-3 on the road. Per Cleaning the Glass, they are 23rd in offense, 26th in defense, and 29th in net rating. So just as a base question for you, Ty, what were your expectations for this Bucks team heading into the season? Obviously, the season isn't over. We got 77-plus games to go. But what were your feelings entering the season, and how they kind of meshed with what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I thought they would be around the 3 seed in the East this year. So pretty far from that, down there at 14 right now. You know, you figure, I think everyone clocks Boston as number one, right? Like Porzingis is out, doesn't even seem to matter. So I did the same, but thought the Bucks would be a good regular season team with the continuity. I think with what felt like a better fitting roster around Damian Lillard assembled versus last year when Dame was really the last piece they added before camp started. And that has not played out at all. I think not having Chris Middleton has been a factor, but I don't think enough of a factor to lead to this start by any means. And I think the most frustrating part about it was game one, their one win so far, kind of felt like it reinforced the prior of like, oh, these guys have figured out how to play together more. They're moving the ball more on offense. Like, I think 6 players or maybe almost 7 players scored double figures. I think 6 had double figures. The 7th was at 9 points. So it's kind of everybody eats, but also Dame and Giannis are at or around 30 points. Like, those guys are still getting their shots. Defensively, we know they're not going to be great, but they stuck to their principles and it worked. And then from there, it's really just kind of fallen apart. And I think for this team, that starts with, if they're not doing well offensively, they just can't hang defensively. They are bad in transition and semi-transition. They need to be better at those things, but they're never going to be great at those things, I think, with this collection of players. So they need to execute offensively in a way that they just have not. After, again, a really good game against Philly, I'd say a very good first half against Boston, and then some moments against Memphis. But the Brooklyn, Chicago, and the rest of those games, I just think they have not executed well. And then when they are sloppy offensively, they just can't hang defensively anymore with this roster.
I got you. I guess on the offense, just broadly speaking, what have you seen from the offensive end? Because you look at the box score numbers for Giannis and Dame, they've been pretty solid. Like, Dame hasn't knocked down perimeter shots to his usual level, but it's felt like the drives have been good this year. It feels like the duo themselves have been playing pretty solid when they're in action together. Just what have you seen generally from the offense?
Yeah, I think they're still good when they play together. There's definitely a clunkiness to it that you'd hoped would have been ironed out a little bit more. But that said, like, even if it's a little clunky, like, a non-optimal Dame Giannis possession is still getting either of those guys more space than they've had in like the rest of their careers, and they're doing well with it overall. Dame was really bad in Memphis. We'll see if that improves, I guess. Scottie Pippen Jr. had to prove something to Darvin Ham, something like that. And he sure did. Credit to him. But I think those two guys have been able to do their own thing well enough. They still need to come together a little bit better. But I thought, again, outside of the Philly game, it's been kind of just them. And some of that is on those guys. I thought especially games 2 and 3, the Chicago-Brooklyn games, they were not looking to pass or move the ball nearly enough. And the Bucks right now, with no Chris, the role players are not really creating much for themselves. And then I think the offense just got a little stagnant. And then as hard as it is to guard Giannis or Dame, if it's just those guys and everyone else is more or less standing around, teams can generally get enough stops. And then any, you know, again, turnovers or runouts on a missed three or something, the Bucks defense, especially with those, I think those role players kind of cold, they're not moving as much, they're not getting back fast enough, that's hurt them. So I think it's not that Giannis and or Dame has been like bad or fallen off or whatever. I think it's more that they, after a game one where they were so good at like finding cutters and guys were so good at cutting and there was ball movement. And I was like, oh, Torian Prince is going to be a revelation to this offense. And just wait until Gary Trent Jr. gets cooking, which we're still, I think that will come. He's been pretty cold from three to start. But I think that's been their biggest issue offensively. It's not talent. It's a little bit talent without Chris, but it's more to me not committing to what they showed should be their base in game one with the more ball movement, especially like out of the post. Giannis and Bobby Portis were finding a lot of movers out of the post instead of just going right to the basket. I think they need to get back to that more.
Okay. Steve, I'll toss it to you. Just what have you seen from Milwaukee's offense broadly, and specifically, how have you seen the Dame Giannis two-man game progress from last season?
Well, you know, kind of to bounce off what was said, I think the Dame and Giannis two-man game looks better, feels better, has a better flow. Giannis has a better understanding of timing and rhythm and when to screen, what angle to take, when to slip. Dame having a better understanding of how to get it to Giannis quickly in the pocket, working to get to rescreens. That's felt more natural. That's felt better than it did last year. I think the tricky part for Milwaukee right now, and just kind of bouncing off what Ty said, kind of threw something in my head, so I'm roll it out here. Are you ready, Nikias, for an attempt? Game one, 43 made field goals, 27 assists.
Okay.
46 made field goals, 24 assists. Mm-hmm. 33 made field goals, 20 assists. 37 made field goals, 18 assists. 41 made field goals, 20 assists.
Well, that would track with the ball move from game one.
Now, here's the thing. I'm going to ask you a question. I'll ask both of y'all a question.
Okay.
Can you name the Milwaukee Buck, not named Giannis Antetokounmpo or Damian Lillard, to have more than 4 assists in a game?
It just once or per game?
Just a singular.
I know who it is, but I'll let Nikias guess because it was such an outlier. Oh, I maybe gave it away.
Darn. It wasn't Bob Port, was it?
No.
Could have been. Was this Gary?
It was Brook Lopez, game one. I think he had Brooke, 6.
How about that? That's because they had the stat with the, I think, the assist blocks or something else that he was on the graphic for. I literally tweeted out the graphic. That's funny.
Yeah, he had 6 blocks and 6 assists in that game. That's what I mean. It was like, oh, they found something with this, like, anchor these very skilled offensive players. They have 3 of them in the post, and then it's so easy to move around those guys. And, you know, the defense gets caught ball watching, and it's easy for someone to slip or cut, or Dame can get open. And it's just not been enough of a feature of their offense ever since that game. And it's, you know, that's the frustrating part of this slow start. Is I don't think it's just like, oh, they're decrepit, they're old, they can't move, they all fell off, like it's a basketball wasteland. I think a lot of it is just like, you know, basketball aside, and I want to get your guys' take as smarter, you know, basketball knowing minds. Does it just feel like the vibes are bad? Like, is that a simpleton thing to say? Because it seems like the vibes are not good. And every time they have one of these cold spells offensively, Giannis talked about this after the game, like, I hate seeing these heads drop. Like, we can't do that in the NBA. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's a good call, Giannis.
Well, I'll throw this out here real quick. The vibes are bad thing is going to get tapped. I put my hands up personally because the easiest way to turn vibes around is to win basketball games.
Yeah.
And then once you start winning basketball games, all of a sudden magically vibes tend to appear.
Right.
I think the disappointing factor, if you're a Bucks fan, is probably, hey, this looks a lot like last year.
Yeah.
Why does this look like last year? Based on how it started last year, what they got to, how it ended last year. This is year two. You probably expect at least certain things to not be happening. You expect a certain competitive factor. You know, obviously the Memphis game was the Memphis game, but how much activity do you feel defensively consistently? Offensively, how much will do you have to see them continue to move the ball side to side? Like, I think there are moments and flashes where you can see what they're trying to do movement wise. All right, you got Giannis pointing, hey, let me get a pick and roll. Let's go pass and cut. Hey, I don't have anything. Let me get a dribble hand off of Dame. They have crispness. And then there are other possessions where, okay, it's time for Dame to get a high pick and roll. Defense, actually, I'm just going to go over, or I'll slide under. Now, we're not worried about Brooke popping. Dame, Giannis, dribble handoff. We'll just slide under. Giannis pick and roll with Brooke. We'll switch that. Like, there are things that teams are just not really cooperating with, in a sense that the Bucks were, in theory, supposed to have something that's going to make you react every single time.
Yeah.
And you look at even just like Dame, Giannis pick and roll. Okay, Dame, you got to make drives. I thought his drives were pretty, really good last year. I don't think they've been terrible this year. But at the same time, you have to hit this for us to change. Or you have to make a whole bunch of those shots for us to shift. We're not going to give it to you automatically. And so I think that's where it gets tricky, because now you want to go Giannis pick and roll. That's fine, but is the weak side going to move?
Yeah.
How many of those buckets do you have to get? And then I think defensively for me, it's just a weird deal, because they have activity, but I don't know where their base is at right now. I kind of mentioned on the last pod, you are banking on screen navigation to work. And I think Torian Prince and Gary Trent Jr. have shown good things defensively, but there are a lot of possessions where there's a ball handler dribbling into space, and it's worked for so long because Brooke has been so lights out protecting the rim. If he takes a step back, it's tough. If now you're asking multiple people to navigate screens and they're not able to get back in front, it doesn't work as well. And now you don't have the collective effort. You're not getting back. You're not matching up. It's just little things. And so I think it's you got to look in the mirror. You should have already looked in the mirror, but you got to look in the mirror.
I think to bounce off of that, I guess first to answer the question, like, the vibes don't seem great. And like the meme that's just floating around NBA Twitter is just, it was Doc after the run for Boston.
He's five times a game. He is at right angles far too often. I don't blame him for it. I do the same watching the games, but yeah, it's not good when he's at this firm angle here.
Yeah. So like, we've had a lot of Doc, and like, you can see, and sometimes depending on the feed that you get, you can sometimes hear Giannis with some of the breakdowns. So like, I find it difficult as someone that's not on the Milwaukee beat and can't ask these guys directly. I find it hard to go from like, there is a problem in the locker room where these guys don't like each other versus, oh, Giannis was very frustrated because something didn't get communicated and there was a layup given up. And so like, those things have popped on film for me, but like, I can't responsibly get to, hey, this is bad. Something's happening on the inside. I need to blow this up. Yada, yada, yada. I think to Steve's point, as they clean things up and as they win basketball games, because they're not going 1-81, I imagine some of that stuff gets better. When Chris Middleton comes back, I would imagine the half-court offense gets better. At the very least, you have another fail-safe, so it isn't just Dame drive, Dame pick and roll, Dame handoff, Giannis drive, Giannis mid-post, Giannis ISO. Having Chris Middleton, who is going to be getting, what, the third best defender on any team still in this context, like, that should help balance some stuff out. And even with Milwaukee's offense, noted the numbers earlier, 23rd in offensive rating per clean the glass, that isn't good. They are 15th in half-court offense. That isn't where they want to be. But the fact that it has been as this consistent as it is, and they're basically league average right now, it's like there is upside there. And as you mentioned, Ty, like, Gary Trent Jr. hasn't shot well from deep yet. Dame hasn't shot well from deep yet. And so, like, even with that kind of thing, like, that should help settle in the half-court defense on the other end. We can transition to the defense now if you'd like. Because, like, that's the thing that I brought up on the last pod that's caught my eye more than anything. Not even that it is irredeemable, though the transition defense has to get better. And some of that is just, hey, let's make shots so we don't have to be in transition as much. But within their half-court thing that I noted on the last episode, hey, this is a lot of, we're keeping pick and rolls on the side. Let's just cut the floor in half if we can and kind of funnel things. And to Steve's point, if the screen navigation isn't there and the bigs are going to be dropped back as far as they are, like, that is just a lot of space for ball handlers to have to kind of navigate and lead the dance. And so what's been interesting to me over these last couple of games, Ja didn't particularly care about it last night, but you are seeing more of, we're keeping this on the side. Here's a third defender that's around the free throw line. Let's be more intentional and be more consistent about at least having that presence there. That doesn't guarantee perfect defense, but it's like, okay, we're at least seeing a minor adjustment, or you're at least seeing a point of emphasis there. So they're not just late. We're in our base. It works or it doesn't. Like, there have been some tweaks that I've seen over the past couple of games. So we'll see what that leads to in terms of the overall efficiency of the defense. But yeah, like, it does feel like a lot of the do better button. And I think a lot of it, to your point, Ty, is just going to be the offense has to be a little bit better. Shots have to fall. And I would like for that flow to continue. Actually, before we get to the defense, I'll ask you a quick Brook question for you. Mm. How have you felt about the Brook Lopez usage so far this year? How often he's spaced, where he's been spaced? Because, like, one of the stats that I looked up before the show that kind of surprised me, at least per second spectrum, he's only logged 4 drives in 5 games this year. And, like, the Brook, not that it was a high volume thing last year, but, like, watching Bucks games, it's very funny, the random Brook Lopez from the 3-point line, slow-mo drive, and it's just efficient offense. And yeah. So the fact that we just haven't seen that is at least interesting to me. Maybe not awful end of the world type stuff, but it's something that, okay, it didn't feel like it's been a lot of that. And then looking up the actual numbers, like, oh, that's really low.
Yeah, I think more of them have been rolls because he's such a good screener for Dame, and that's such a good button for them to press. So I think that's a little bit of the reason. I also think they are just generally hesitant to get him close to the rim a lot on offense because then he's so far from the paint defensively. And I think it's just so important for them. And they just, especially when Giannis isn't out there, they just don't have any cover, right? Like if Brook is behind the 5 offensive players and the ball's going the other way, their chances just feel like zero right now of getting a stop with no Giannis. I mean, it's Bobby Portis at the 5 or just another wing player. And it's just bad. So I almost think it's not about, or they're prioritizing Brook's defense over Brook's offense, which is a shame because he is probably one of still their most offensively gifted players. And it's almost, I think it's unfortunate for him that a lot of that ends up being these like pretty far above the break threes that he's been ice cold to start. He actually started to heat up against Memphis, which I think was one of the positives of that game. He just needed to see those fall. I figured he would, right? He looks so good defensively. I don't think his shot was just going to randomly disappear. He's always been streaky since he became a quote unquote, you know, sharp shooting big, but they almost need him to do that semi-regularly just because, one, I think if you turn down open shots, it just totally slows down your offense and then kind of wastes the honest Dame advantages. So it's good he doesn't do that. But two, they just need him to do something offensively without being so far from the defensive paint. I think they could do more with him rolling. I think it would help, or just cutting. I mean, to your point, how often do you see teams stashing like Dorian Finney-Smith on him? I mean, that's a huge mismatch for Brook in the post, especially if you clear out a side of the floor. I mean, sometimes they dump it to him. If the floor is congested, he can be prone to getting it popped out by the help defenders. Everyone's so fast comparatively to Brook. But if you space the floor well for him or get him rolling or driving with some space, he's really effective. I mean, it's really hard for most players in the league to do anything to disrupt his shot. It's kind of just on Brook at that point to put it in. But I think there's just a concern of like our transition defense and our half court defense is going to be even worse the more we have Brook not able to get that extra step going back.
Okay, no, that makes a lot of sense, kind of layering in the spacing point to kind of getting the early shell set up defensively for them, as the Bucks again, have not been, they're 29th in transition defense in terms of points per possession allowed.
Who's
right
worse?
Now.
Do you have it in front of you? Wow.
I can pull that right back up since I have the tab open. This is why
you
have 87
tabs. I don't mean to make you do extra. I'm surprised that I think in the third quarter, they were allowing 2 points per possession to Memphis in transition. I just can't imagine there's a team worse.
No, funny enough, this is probably a thing that flipped over the past couple of days. The Los Angeles Lakers currently.
Wow. Not a team I would have guessed.
Yeah, it's been Cleveland in particular got them. Yeah. Earlier this week.
Oh, good. But, good. Two Cavs games coming up for the Bucks.
As the Cleveland Cavaliers notably playing faster than they did last season. Actually, before we move, Steve, did you have any Brook Lopez usage thoughts? Or anything
I know,
that's
popular. Before
you
go, I know you're a true Brook Lopez appreciator, Steve, so I'm excited to hear this.
No, I mean, I think with Brook, it's more so how involved is he in certain actions? How are teams guarding him? And does he get any sort of mismatches or anything like that? I feel like it's kind of been a little different in that area. I think he's been aggressive. I think it's been more 3-point oriented than typical. I think, you know, one thing is how you mentioned the drives. How many free throws has Brook shot this year?
That also doesn't feel like a high number, especially if he's going to be on the perimeter much.
That's where it's like, okay, which side are we going to use? And so if he's space, you kind of need him space, obviously, as Ty mentioned, for the balance, but also because we need to create room on the court.
Yeah.
If he's going to be involved in a screening action, how many times does he really get into a role? Because we're having to set these super high for Dame, for Giannis. So now his role becomes a role to, what, three? And now he catches, and it's either I advance it to the next side or I take this shot. And so I just think he's kind of stuck in this box of one, two, or three. And you'd probably like to see him in some different opportunities, especially when they, you know, as they sub, they go to the double big lineup. How much of that is Bobby Portis do Bobby Portis stuff versus Brooke do Brooke stuff?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fair. And to answer your question, Steve, it is 11 free throw attempts through the first five games for Brooke Lopez. So not as high as you would like. It's almost like, how about that? How about that? To the defense point, as Ty, I'll ask you a broad question here. Like, what upside do you see with the defense, or what level do you think they can get to? Because I don't think this is them. But what is kind of the ceiling of this particular group, in your opinion?
I think the ceiling is probably like somewhere broadly around 10th. Probably not single digit rating like of defenses in the league, but if they were like 11th with an offense in the top two, I think that's probably where I could see them absolutely topping out. I don't think they would ever be a like the fifth best unit in the league with this personnel, even with, you know, I think it pains me to say this. I've been a big fan of his for a long time. I think Pat Connaughton probably just can't be in the old rotation anymore. Some of the clips of him getting beat from the perimeter have just been tough, man, given the way he shot the ball the last two, three seasons now. But I think they can get to solid because the back line is so great. You know, you have Giannis, you have Brooke Lopez. You know, you need your guards to contribute more, as you guys have been saying. I mean, the separation on initial actions, or just not even actions. Like, again, the separation from a guy catching out at the elbow and just driving to the rim unimpeded with no action has just been, you know, it's too taxing even for Brooke, all the work he does. But I think they can be, or at worst, I think they could top out as average, you know, 15th, 14th, something like that. And I think they could be good enough that way. The funny thing about them is they don't want to speak about that. They don't want to accept that, which I get it, you know, where they came from, the way they've played for so long. You know, they want to be a defensive first team. I think that's great. I think it's probably a good philosophy. You know, I think that's probably how you lock in on defense more. Offense is more fun naturally. But I think realistically, this is a team with this personnel that's going to top out as a better offense than defense at a certain point.
I got you. Like, I feel like that's kind of the bet that they made when you turned Drew Holiday into Damian Lillard. It's like, hey, we trust that our foundation up front is going to be strong enough, at least at the very least during the regular season, to where you're just not getting fruitful shots. You're not getting free throw attempts.
Yeah.
And if you're not making jumpers against us, you're in a tough spiel. And with Damian Lillard, like, the offensive floor and ceiling just raises when he's your primary initiator. So, like, for me, it's baked in. I don't think we get like top three Bucks defense anymore. Like, at best, it is with Brook and Giannis on the floor, you do kind of like the lineup filtering. They defend at X level.
Yeah.
So to your point, like, getting to 14th, 15th, like, that seems reasonable to me, especially if, you know, if some of the separation kind of cuts down with dribble penetration. Like, looking up their drive numbers, they're pretty much middle of the pack right now in terms of points per possession allowed on drives, which, again, not great, not where they want to be, to your point about establishing that culture and that mindset and wanting to lock in on that level. But, like, as bad as it's felt for Milwaukee, like, the fact that they are middle of the pack in terms of just keeping the ball in front and giving up shots there, like, that is glass half full. That's a pretty solid sign, because you can just be better at that kind of stuff. And if they are layering in more help, that should cut off at least a little bit of the early penetration that we're seeing with them still. I think the one thing that's been interesting for me, like, it's been interesting off and on for me through the last 2-3 years with Giannis in particular, is just his defensive usage and what they're asking him to do, because it's felt like you have been super roamer, which he's won a defensive player of the year like that. Not that he can't do other things, but in that role, he just chews up so much space and he's such a good rim protector, et cetera. And watching his primary coverage when he's directly involved kind of shift from he's in the deep drop and then we get the Adrian Griffin era and he's flying around, And now we're back in not just a deep drop, but it's felt like an even deeper drop than last year. And I'm just like, Giannis can probably do this. I don't know if he's impacting things as much as he could be right now. And I don't know how much of that is just early season sample. And with how much he's being asked to do offensively, is that a bit of preservation for him? Like, I'm just not dealing with you until you get all the way to me because I have to do so much on the other end or what? But like, yeah. That is something where I wonder if a tweet comes from Giannis in the way that he's used, especially when he's directly involved in actions. Do we see him creep up a step higher? Do we see him switch more than we've seen so far this season? Like that, those are some of the questions that I kind of have with him. Not that he's been bad defensively, but just, I feel like he could be, he's probably the biggest driver of flipping this thing just by virtue of the athleticism, the size, the length, all that good stuff. And so if they do anything differently with him, or if he just decides because he's Giannis, I would imagine he has a level of freedom, I'm just going to be a little bit more aggressive on some of this stuff. Like, what does that do in helping turn Milwaukee's defense around to kind of get into that middle of the pack number that you speak of?
Yeah, I think you're right on, is that a lot of it is going to come down to Giannis. And I think this is something that we talked about on the pod earlier this week of, would love him to cede some offense to Dame and the others, so to speak, to lock in more on that end, not as anything negative about him offensively, but I think that's what they need more right now. You know, Dame and Gary Trent, you know, didn't happen in Memphis, should be able to take on even a little more offense than they have, right? Like, those are very good offensive players. I think Trent especially, I've been disappointed with. Feels like he's really only, like, they give him like one drive every quarter or two. Otherwise, it's just open threes. I think he's a better offensive player than that. I think they need to incorporate what he can do off the dribble, off actions, a little bit more for this reason. So then you can say, Giannis, you know, you're, you know, this, you know, franchise player, we know you can score 30. That's terrific. We probably needed a lot of nights. We really need you to be incredible defensively again. Like, we need you to be that kind of player again. It's difficult. That's a hard conversation, right? I mean, Marcus Johnson, now Bucks broadcaster, who's incredible. You know, Don Nelson famously came to him when he was scoring 30 early one year and said, we actually need you to score 25 and assist more. Like, it's not an easy conversation. It's a famous conversation now in Bucks lore. I think Doc maybe has to have one of these similar conversations of like, we need more defensively, maybe a little less offensively, especially, you know, in Memphis in October 31st and in November against Cleveland. Like, we need a little bit more there. To your point about how they're using him, I think it's a good one. I'm really surprised they almost never, it feels like, switch as a wholesale strategy. I mean, they'll switch some ball actions, but I thought the Giannis Bobby lineups, which are always going to be a bit of an adventure defensively, we'll say, I think switching a lot has been what that group has done the best at historically, because I just think Bobby has trouble navigating space defensively. I think when he drops, you see it. There was a possession against Boston I yelled about. Like, he ends up behind both offensive players as the drop big defending a pick and roll. Like, he just can't do that. I mean, you lost the possession at that point. But switching, like, he's, you know, he's mobile for his size. Like, he can kind of stay in front of guys. I think they should do that more. I think they should lean more on, okay, Bobby and Giannis, you know, especially those two, let's just switch a bunch of stuff. Let's try to keep the ball in front of us. Let's, maybe we give up a semi-open catch and shoot look. Maybe we lose someone and they have to hit a runner. We've seen the Bucks win a lot of games by giving up relatively open runners and not a lot else over the course of a regular season. So I do think they need to tweak the usage a bit. I think they're better in the Giannis Brook configuration. I think they know a little bit more what to do, although there's still some moments where it's like, maybe they don't know exactly what to do. I mean, especially that Nets game, it felt like they didn't know a lot of the times. Are we switching? Are you staying with the action? Or are we going over? Is Brook in the deep drop? Sam Vecenie of the Game Theory Pod made a great video about this. And I agree with him because several times he's like, well, Brook wanted to do this. I'm assuming that was the right thing. So this other player was probably in the wrong. I think, yeah, that's probably a safe assumption. But yeah, I think they need to get a little more creative with how they use Giannis. And I think he needs to, again, shift a little bit. I'm not saying he should just be a screen setter, average 8 points on offense, but a little bit less energy on driving through three guys, a little bit more energy on, you know, sealing up a couple extra possessions to get running on the other end.
Got you. So I want to get you in here, Steve, but just a couple of quick stats based off what you said, Ty. With Gary Trent Jr., received 16.4 off-ball screens per 100 possessions last year. He's at 6.3 through the early goings of this Milwaukee Bucks season. So to your point about some of the usage there, like, there is room for a little bit more. Even if it isn't him getting a touch, just a little bit more movement for him, because it has been a lot of space on the weak side. They've gotten good stuff out of you know, Gary and Torian, you space on one side of the floor. We got Dame Giannis Brook on the other side, and you can generate good looks out of that. So a little bit of a middle ground could be found there. And then just quickly looking at the switch numbers for Giannis per second spectrum, switched roughly 38% of the pick and rolls that he faced last season. That is down to 9.6% through the first five games of this year. So again, probably a little bit of a middle ground that can be found on that front. Steve, your thoughts on Giannis and the way that he's been used. Has there been anything that's kind of popped on film for you in that regard?
I mean, I just think it's a decisiveness on what they want to do to use him. Is he going to be in a drop? Is he going to switch? It's kind of funny. He did switch a little bit more in the Memphis game at the start. But I think it kind of just ties in overall to what does Milwaukee want to do defensively? And are they going to execute with conviction? I think for me, there's a possession in the Memphis game. I'm moving it off Giannis because I thought Ty nailed a whole lot of it. They look to put Dame in pick and roll, right? Milwaukee has two bigs in, Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez, which in theory would give you maximum rim protection. They don't switch this screen when Scottie Pippen Jr. screens. Gary Trent Jr. sends it to Dame, who's flat at the level. Scottie Pippen rolls. Jake LaRavia is at the dunker spot and moves. Both your bigs are spaced in the corner, and it's Torian Prince as the low help. Philosophy-wise, where is the consistency? What are we operating with every single time? That's probably what you feel is missing, because last year they had kind of leaned into, okay, we're going to switch, we're going to try and contain. When we keep the ball in front, we can be solid, we get stops, we run. You don't feel that this year. You don't feel that kind of connectivity. It just kind of feels like there is going to be some help on drives, but are we certain that we're going to operate in pick and roll? For me, with Giannis in pick and roll, I've always been like, I don't know why he's in a drop, but eventually I gave up that ghost because he always ends up to be back there. I just think for a defense that's trying to find its identity or trying to find its way or trying to find its consistency, it's tough when Brook is in a drop and then Giannis is in a drop. And then what are we doing guard screen wise? Like, how many coaches are we going to have where guard screens or something you can exploit against the Bucks? That combination starts to make it tough. So for me, it's less specifically about Giannis. I think you can figure that portion out. He's a very good defender. You'll make it work. And it's more about, okay, what are we going to do every single night? Which is a weird thing to say considering where they were last year defensively.
Just quickly, I think Rex Kalamian was their defensive coordinator when Doc came in last year. And they hired Dave Buckner from the Cavs staff, old J.B. Bickerstaff's old staff, to kind of coordinate the defense this year. And I do think it has, you've noticed a change in the way they play, even though it's two Doc teams and everyone loves to make everything about Doc. And I'm not saying Doc's done, I think, an amazing job this season. But of course, that's where a lot goes quickly, or Darvin Ham. But I do think they've, it feels like Buckner has wanted to do more ice, more, you know, make it one side of the floor, less switching. I do hope they incorporate more of it back. I mean, they were finding ways to defend with Gallo against the Pacers in the playoffs. I just think they can get more out of this personnel. Happy Galloween, by the way. He posted an awesome graphic yesterday. Anyone not keeping up with Danilo Gallinari?
Actually, I'll use that as a transition point as we just kind of zoom up through, again,
incredible podcasting by you. I gave you nothing. Good work, Nikias.
Hey, come on. This is what I do. But no, again, it's only five games. It's a five-game sample. The season isn't done yet. But with the slow start, from your view, Ty, like, how much of this is just personnel has to play better, and how much of this is actual coaching from your eye?
I think a little more than 50-50 is play better. You know, I thought Giannis and Dame have both had moments where I think they hit the ISO button too quickly. I think it's a great button to have both of those guys be able to do throughout games. But my preference would be, let's hit that button, you know, 8 seconds left on the shot clock and two actions haven't worked, right? And, you know, teams have switched or covered up what we're doing. And okay, now Dame, go ahead, like, take a pull up. I don't like, all right, Dame's going to take a pull up with 18 on the clock, or more like 14 on the clock, the way they get pressured every possession and lose a lot of clock. I think they need to get more release valves on the inbound, because it feels like that's been a huge issue for them, and they're just not adjusting enough to that pressure. Brook had a great down screen at half court once against Philly that totally freed up Dame. I'd like to see more things like that. But I think that's certainly there, of just like the, but that's also, you could say that's coaching too, right? Of making sure they get into more actions. I think there's a balance there between, you know, you're not calling sets every single time down the floor, especially with Giannis and Dame. But it is also coaching. I also think rotation-wise, you know, I've been kind of muted on Andre Jackson Jr. just because there's some obvious flaws there. He's helped them the last two games. I just think they need a little bit more of that, you know, speed and athleticism, but also just the complexion of how they play changes when he's on the court. Guys just start moving more when they see this guy zipping around. He's their best peeler by far. I mean, when they are in rotation, he's just able to get out there, and he might lose the guy. I don't think he's actually a great one-on-one defender the way some do, but it's been okay. I think he's still been a net positive because at least you're keeping the rotations going. I think one of their issues has been, you know, maybe they make the first shift defensively well, their rotations are just slow, or they're ball watching and they lose a shooter like that. So I think more of him and less of someone, like I mentioned earlier, like a Pat Connaughton, who has just not been able to get out in time, or has just been getting beat on the rotation, which pains me. He's become such a good driver offensively, but they just need more defense right now, clearly, and just more foot speed there. So I said they're not, I don't think they're dead in the water from that perspective by any means, but I think they do need some more juice defensively. But also, I mean, the three-point numbers that they've given up, I think some of the opposing shots, they've given up a lot of bad ones, but I think that's then gotten some players confident, and then they're just red hot. Like, I think there's a little bit of, you know, we can play better. There's a little bit of noise here in this start. I think the Memphis game was like that. But I think there's things that they need to fix, too, and they need to be proactive. I mean, you're 14th in the East with Giannis and Dame playing every game. Like, at a certain point, it's like noise is noise, but you just have to have a better result than that at this point. We're early. We're very early. But still, five games, 14th in the East, not something this group is used to.
Okay, I got you. I think quickly on the rotation front, like as a UConn guy, I'm never going to poo-poo Andre Jackson Jr. get more playing time just as a concept. But no, I do think, to your point, just having that level of athleticism out there. And yeah, I think I'm with you at this point. Like, I don't think he's a great one-on-one guy. Like, I don't know if the Bucks just have that guy on the roster. Like, I think the closest thing, at least heading into the season for me, was going to be DeLon Wright. And yeah, he's underwhelmed to me defensively to start the year. Again, it's very early, but I was anticipating better screen navigation too, especially if you're going to go with this much ice coverage or this much big in drop. He kind of has to set the table when he's in. And I think him not being up to his usual standard so far is a big part of why I think the minutes aren't higher. Cause I think in general, like, he is a bigger guard. Like, you could, in theory, get into some two or three guard setups with DeLon Wright if he was defending. But I think heading into the season, it's going to be more, hey, he's open, will he take this shot in rhythm, or is he going to pass this up? Cause he isn't the most aggressive scorer. I don't think you can have that. Plus, this is B level screen navigation instead of A, considering what the rest of the defense has been so far. And so I am keeping an eye on the second unit. I'm glad you brought up Andre. DeLon's been interesting to me. I guess for me, like, where does Milwaukee go with this second unit in general? Because we just got the news yesterday, as we recorded on a Friday morning, like, Marjon Beauchamp had the team option declined. Yeah. I guess I'll stop there. Like, how were you surprised by that decision from Milwaukee?
No, I mean, we're in this second apron world where 4.7 million feels like kind of a lot to the Bucks at this point. It's not a lot for a rotation player, but I think him getting supplanted by guys like the two AJs, Andre Jackson Jr. and AJ Green, at a certain point, it just has felt like, okay, those guys are barely playing. You're behind both of them. There's just not going to be a window here. I know there's been some chatter that they've like explored trades as well. At this point, I'm kind of just like, I hope they do find a landing spot. He just needs to play more. He had some nice signs last season, but I just think he has some inconsistencies on both ends that kind of scared a few coaches now away from playing him a little bit more. Although, you know, he shot like 40% from three last season. I think you'd love to give him some more burn occasionally, and I wouldn't even mind seeing him a little bit going forward. Like, I think the Grizzlies declined LaVeria's option after he had a nice game against the Bucks. But the rumor is they still want to re-sign him, right? Maybe the door isn't closed. We'll see. But I think right now it'd be a long shot for him to remain with the Bucks. So I was disappointed, of course, and something like that happens with a young player, but not really surprised at all, given just like the way things have gone for him in the pecking order, even just among the young guys.
I got you. Steve, has anyone popped for you with the second unit with Milwaukee, or is there anything, any notes you'd like to add on the Milwaukee second unit front?
I think one thing for me with the Milwaukee second unit is keeping an eye on just the combinations they attempt and do they complement each other. I think it's pretty clear they want to go with Pat, with DeLon Wright, with Bobby Portis, mix in either an AJ or an Andre Jackson. But then are the units going to help each other? So if you transition from your starting lineup to Bobby and Brooke, is that going to get the most out of Bobby? Is that going to get the most out of Dame? When you go to Giannis and Bobby, do you want Pat Connaughton and DeLon Wright out there at the same time? Does that help? Who does that help? Who's that sort of purpose to? So I think for Milwaukee, part of it is trying to find a way to get the pieces in the right place to help with each other. So Gary Trent Jr., can he boost some of these lineups? Can Torian Prince boost some of these lineups? Or because of their who they're playing with, okay, we're going to lock it on Giannis, or we're going to just work on the Bobby post-ups. We don't fear the spacing here. So now, okay, we need shooting. Hey, it's AJ Green time. But that gives up something else as well. So I think that's probably a key part for Milwaukee that I'm keeping an eye on with their second unit.
Yeah, I think another spacer in that unit when it's Giannis and bench would help a lot. I think the lineups without AJ Green or Trent, they've just been a little too coverable, and defenses just aren't really fearing anything outside of Giannis. And I think it was the Brooklyn game or maybe the Chicago game. AJ Green came in and just ran like three straight actions with Giannis, knocked down, I think, his three threes of the season or something. And it was like, oh, that felt a lot easier than everything else they've been doing. And we just haven't seen more of it. So I'd like to see whether it's him or Trent, kind of a, you know, starter stagger there. But the Giannis and bench, when it is DeLon, Pat Connaughton, Bobby, and then one other wing player like Torian or another bench player, they have not been very good at all so far. The Giannis plus minus is startling, frankly. He was really good on that end of the Memphis game, but going into it, it's unnerving. I think overall, still -7 per game on the season, just straight up points, which is not what you're used to seeing at all from the Bucks perspective.
Gotcha. I think with AJ Green in particular, because he is shooting well from three, I think all he's taken is three so far this season. Like, yeah. Is it just defensive trust with Doc to why he isn't playing more?
I wish I knew. I think Doc has complimented his defense begrudgingly, like last season, goes he's really solid out there. And I think he is. Like, I think AJ Green's actually a pretty good positional defender. You know, he's not giving you that plus burst like Andre Jackson Jr. we talked about, where he's going to amaze you how fast he peels out or like block a shot at the rim. But I think he's good at staying in front. I think he's competent. I think he's actually a solid ball handler from the lens of being a shooter. Like, he will pull up into a shot and then hit a roller if you go with him in a very, like, very unexpected way that's worked really well. I think he got Giannis a dunk in one of the first two games that way. I wonder if it's actually the ball handling for Connaughton. Like, I do think he's really improved at actually being able to run pick and rolls with players and keep the offense moving in a way that with DeLon Wright has not shown much on that end at all. He actually probably had his best game of the year against the Grizzlies. I actually wonder if it's that, which again, Middleton coming back, of course, helps. I'd also like to see, like, can we just slide Trent into more of those configurations and ask him to do more of that and then get either plus spacing in Green, plus athleticism and team defense in Jackson Jr. to try and overcome those things, which have just been huge issues for the Bucks.
Okay. Last question I have for you on the second unit front, because we've talked a little bit about Bobby so far. It just feels like Bobby is the most, at least from my timeline, he's just the most polarizing guy on the roster. For Bucks fans, just where do you land on the Bobby Portis experience?
I think he is a player that was more essential to them in the Drew configuration. I think at that point they needed more of the, all right, we have not scored in four possessions, but we've gotten four stops. Like, let's dump it down to Bobby and let him bruise somebody up and get to the basket or do his offensive rebounding thing. And they've been a really bad offensive rebounding this team this year too. I think it's been tough this year. Again, just knowing the way they're going to be by default when your starters, at least he hasn't played yet, are Dame, Trent, Chris Middleton. It's a lot of offense there. And of course, Giannis as well. And it feels like there were possessions, like in Boston that third quarter, there were times when Dame and Giannis was on the court together and they're just watching Bobby post up and no one's moving. And it's like, this is not good. This is not optimal. Bobby's good at this. That is not an intelligent use of a play with those two guys on the court. And I think there's a world where Bobby helps them more by just rolling. He's good in the dunker spot. He's a good spacer, like just doing those things. But the way they've continued to use him as though they need these post touches, I just don't buy that they do. And I think if his role doesn't shift, it's just difficult to overcome his defensive, you know, shortcomings for a guy who on the other end, Dame is standing there watching him post up. Like, especially again, night one, a lot of ball movement around him. It felt better. It felt more sustainable. Like, okay, this makes more sense to utilize and leverage the rest of the talent on the roster. But if it's just everyone standing and watching and then him backing down for 6 seconds and doing the spinning hook, that I don't think is sustainable. So I think you know, I'm not saying you need to dump him tomorrow like a lot of Bucks folks have. I do think you need to tweak how he's used to get not the most out of him necessarily, but the most out of those lineups when he is on the floor.
All right. Makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. Well, Ty, I know you have to go. Last question for you. Just where can the people find you? What do you have coming out? What's on the palette for you?
Yeah, at Ty Windisch on Twitter and IG, and the Eurostep Podcast Network is what our Bucks feed is called, wherever you're listening to or watching this terrific podcast. So if you want more Bucks coverage, whether you're a Bucks fan or someone taking delight in our agony right now, we'll take all comers, and we'll be doing more podcasts probably in the next couple of days, for sure by Monday. But just we'll see how these Cavs games go. We might need to jump on more. We might be doing every game if they keep playing this way, or maybe it'll be a delightful surprise. I'm in for that too, but appreciate the time and for the shout out and having me on the show, you guys.
Hey, watch them go 2-0. Enjoy the multi-view.
I love the multi-view. We need good things to talk about, Steve. We can't be negative for 80 minutes in a row. It's not healthy.
Okay, well, that was Ty Windisch. A lot of Bucks talk there. Close this out with some news and a few questions from the Dunker Spot mailbag. So once again, if you ever have basketball thoughts or questions for us on the NBA or WNBA side, you can email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. On the news front, we'll start with the sad news first. A couple of injury updates. Paolo Banchero, with a torn right oblique, will be reevaluated in 4 to 6 weeks. So tough blow for the Orlando Magic. Paolo, not too long ago, dropped 50 on the Indiana Pacers. Did so earlier this week. But through the first few games of the season, averaging career highs in points, rebounds, assists, and blocks. 29 points, roughly 9 boards, 6 assists, and a block per game. So hopefully Paolo's able to get well soon. And Scotty Barnes took a blow to the eye. It's a right orbital fracture that happened during the Denver-Toronto game earlier this week. Eventually went to overtime. Denver was able to eke that out. But Scotty Barnes is also going to be reevaluated in 3 weeks there. Scotty, through the opening stretch of the season, averaging 19 points, 8 boards, 6 assists, and 2 steals. Free throw rate is up for Scotty. Something to keep an eye on with the drives and just his general refinement inside the arc. On the more positive front, Jason Tatum and Anthony Davis named players of the week. Tatum, through the opening stretch, 33 points, 6 boards, 6 assists, and a steal. And again, shot the leather off the ball from three. And Anthony Davis got off to a riveting start, 34 points, 11 boards, 3 assists, 1.7 steals, and 2.3 blocks. Talked a lot about Tatum and Davis on the previous episode of the Dunker Spots. If you want to check that out, particularly the YouTube version, you can do that. And last note, a quick shout out again to Grizzlies big Jay Huff, who agreed to a 4-year standard contract, averaging 9.5 points per game, converting 71% of his twos, 50% of his threes, and hasn't missed from the line yet. 2 boards and a block in 17 minutes per game off the bench. Steve shouted out Jay Huff with the way that he's been playing for Memphis. Another solid game last night against the Milwaukee Bucks. So quick salutes to Tatum, Davis, and Huff. Get well soon for Scotty and Paolo. Actually, before I move on, Steve, did you have thoughts on any of the news nuggets before we move to the email bag?
Well, I think it's tough for Orlando. I think the Eastern Conference is pretty wide open to a degree, at least at the start, and they were probably geared with their continuity to make an early impression as there are teams trying to figure things out. Some teams maybe not hitting the mark they were expecting to. Some teams working to try and go up a level. I think Orlando is primed to kind of be up there. That's for one of those known quantities, and Paolo Banchero is playing really good. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned the statistics, but if you looked at them, it was a great blend, a great comfort, as far as the type of shots he was looking to get to. The drives were strong. I mean, he was moving people out of the way, getting to pull up threes if he went under. So he just kind of had it going in a good way that you want to see that kind of growth. And so it's going to be tough for Orlando. His team is built. They've got some depth, but a lot of this is we have Paolo, we have Franz, we have guards who can do things. So how they replicate that's going to be interesting. I think for Toronto, you just kind of want health to come at some point. They're working. But if it's only been, one game of Emmanuel Quickley and 2 games of R.J. Barrett and now Scotty Barnes is out, that's not what you want to see when you're trying to build and understand what you need and what you have already. Mm-hmm. So that's a bummer. That pretty much would cover it for me.
Okay, I got you. And with Orlando's start, the offense actually being above league average seemed to be of note. And so without Paolo, naturally the ball is going to be spread more around. More Franz Wagner, assuming that he is just 100% good to go. I think he's been dealing with an illness the last 2 games. I think it's 34 combined minutes over the last two games for Franz as he's dealing with the illness. So hopefully he's good to go because more usage is going to be coming his way. More usage for Jalen Suggs, who's gotten off to a really good start the season. The defense has been wild. He has been shooting a lot of threes, both catch and shoot and off the dribble this year. So curious to see what the expansion of the offensive usage for him is going to look like there. Naturally, Cole Anthony's still there. He'll take on more coming off the bench. Orlando has enough, and the defensive foundation is still there, but it is going to be an interesting stretch for them. And you pretty much nailed on the Scotty portion. Just want to see the complete group, the complete core, and really give them time to build off of things. We'll quickly shout out Grady Dick, who's looked very good for Toronto to start the season, taking closeouts, knocking down shots. The drives feel better, but get well soon to Scotty Barnes. And now to the mailbag. Once again, you can send basketball questions to dunkerspot@yahoo.com if you have them. First question coming from Demetrius, who says, I don't want to be long-winded, but I wanted to say thanks for the work you all do with the pod. The show was fun, and I appreciate how you both cover the game. I fell in love with hoop as a little kid watching NBA on NBC when I got home from church. A big part of that was seeing games commentated by guys who explained things in a way my kid brain got and who never took things too seriously to make me laugh. That included Snapper Jones. It's wild and really special that my grown-up love for the game is supported now by Steve explaining things in a way my slightly more developed brain gets while never taking things too seriously to make me laugh. That's a special thing. As for the hoop, I'm a Cavs fan all in on trying to maximize Evan Mobley as an on-ball weapon who causes rotations and provides rim pressure. What do you guys think the Cavs can do to ramp that usage up in a helpful context? I'm wary of minimizing Darius Garland or getting the offense out of sorts trying to develop this one player.
Well, number one, Demetrius, thank you for the kind words. I'm sure that has to be a little bit wild. But hey, genes are strong. I think for me, when it comes to maximizing Evan Mobley, it's a combination of the system that they have and his aggression within it. So I wouldn't say I would worry about Cleveland doing too much to try and get Evan Mobley going, just the way they're playing. They're playing faster. They're playing with pace. They're playing with tempo. Last year, he established himself as someone who could play next to Jared Allen. You know, it wasn't necessarily always the shot, but you could kind of see the flashes. Okay, if I'm spaced, I can cut. If I get a kick, I can drive. I can post up certain matchups. I think this year, you're seeing a much more decisive Evan Mobley on the perimeter, understanding that teams, when he's spaced, are going to be more likely to show help off of him. When he gets that kick now, it's very little hesitation as far as getting to the drive. I think his footwork has improved. I think the drive angles have improved. So he's looking to get off of it. And he's getting off and getting in the paint and attacking. Last year, we saw the development of the big, big passing with Jared Allen, something that got a lot better as the year went on. So now when he drives, I can drive to score. I can drive to force a big to help me hit Jared Allen. I can drive to force a wing to help and keep our drive and kick game going. Or, you know, obviously I can drive to finish. So it's not necessarily, okay, we have to post Evan Mobley against mismatches. We have to throw it to him at the elbow. He has a versatility that fits within what they're trying to do, and he can play both spots. So I think that's kind of the win. His versatility plus the freedom of this Cavs system, or at least the way they feel about it. You know, I still like what the Cavs did last year, but I think there's a team understanding. You know, when Donovan Mitchell says, hey, it kind of feels like Utah, you start to kind of click as far as understanding, okay, everyone can have a piece of this in a different way. So I don't think Evan Mobley would be in the way of Darius Garland just with how they're playing. And in fact, the best version of Cleveland is probably when those two both have it going, because you know what Donovan Mitchell is going to do and you know what Jared Allen can do when he's able to roll and finish. So it's more just having something that is consistent and you believe in. I think they've shown that so far.
I like it. I like it. I think just to bounce off of what you said there, like, I think they're doing the ramp up the right way to where it isn't, Evan, you're just getting 10% more of the offense and we're just giving you these reps and we're allowing you to grow. Like I mentioned the touches per game numbers, you know, heading into Monday's action on the last episode of the pod where Evan Mobley was leading the Cavs in touches at 56. Like that was a lower number than what it was last season. And you wouldn't think about that. I mean, you wouldn't think that. It's just more balanced out, so it feels that way. I think the freedom that they've given him, particularly after defensive rebounds, like that's an easy way to give him usage without really messing up the overall, like, the overall plan of the offense, if that makes sense. Like, I think they've been smart in how they want to ramp up the usage for him to where it's more early offense stuff to where he can just grab and go on attack or grab and go and we can just have a guard set a screen for him. And if he has the advantage, he has the freedom to attack that. And if not, now to kick the Garland or kick the Mitchell, and now we just get into what we want to get into anyway. And then just looking at the numbers now through actions played on Thursday, like with the pick and rolls in particular, he's averaged about one a game last year. He's at like five this year. I don't know if I want to go higher than that right now, especially with some of the handle limitations that he does still have and has to work through. But if you can vary that out and you can still toss it to him on the elbow. And again, when he does have a mismatch on the block, the fact that he's more comfortable attacking those, again, you don't have to call set pieces for him. That is within the flow of your offense. Hey, this is a weird matchup. We can get it to Evan. We can do that with trust. So I don't think they have to alter too much of what they're doing right now. I think as the, like naturally, as the handle gets tighter, there's more room for the perimeter-based stuff. If the jumper gets better, there's more room for, as Steve mentioned on the last pod, you know, they'll run him off of off-ball screens and get him a touch. Like, I think you could do more of that if you feel comfortable with where the shot is. But I don't think they have to ramp it up more than what they have right now. Like, I think the usage has already expanded. He has more freedom. He's taking advantage of those opportunities. And you're doing that while still having plenty on the table for Darius Garland, for Donovan Mitchell, and even Jared Allen. So I think they're fine with where they're at. And actually, quickly on the Jared Allen front, do you know how many shots he's missed so far this season, Steve?
How many has he missed?
He's missed 9 shots in 5 games.
Oh, that's nuts.
That's freaking incredible. Yeah, he had himself quite a half against the Los Angeles Lakers the other night. But no, Cleveland's been fun. The top-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers after the Indiana Pacers beat the Boston Celtics. So quick shout-out to the Cavs, and shout-out to you again, Demetrius, for the question. Thank you. Next question going to come from Jupiter, who says, we've all heard the term math battle when listening to basketball media. As I know, this phrase has only recently been used in real basketball nerd speak within the last 5 years or so. I think it really accelerated with the parity in the NBA. Ever since it started, people could go in thinking about who would win in a much less fun way. My question is, how would you define math battle to an NBA casual? And when do you first think you used or heard the phrase?
Me personally, I wouldn't. wouldn't go there. And secondly, I heard it on this very podcast. That's where I was reduced to the math battle. I mean, it is what it is. I understand it to a degree. My concern is when it becomes the only outcome or the only thing that could happen, or you point to that as, well, that's the reason why, you know. Yeah, it does become a math battle sometimes. There are some times where you're playing a really good game. This team just made a bunch of threes. You didn't make threes. You're kind of cooked. I don't know if that's something that copy and paste every time. And that's where I get concerned. And I'm getting that way with the 3-point rate and everything too. we'll save that for a different day. You know, you look at Bucks Grizzlies. We talked about the Bucks, right? Mm-hmm. Bucks got smoked. They shot 42 threes. Memphis only shot 28. Milwaukee made 9 threes. Memphis only made 8. Memphis shot 52% from the field. Like, I just, for me, I would always want someone to understand there are different ways to win the game, and the math battle, quote unquote, can flip. Like, I mean, I think, you know, I think I already said what Spo said. Hey, math is math, but you got to go out there and play. So I think for me, I would just be like, there are scenarios where this happens, but I wouldn't necessarily want someone newer to the game to lock in on that. Mm-hmm. As a pure perspective.
I like that. I think for me, the first time I heard it or read it, like, this feels very like Zach Lowe piece for me. If I had to guess when I first like saw the actual phrase used, like, naturally, if you're watching basketball or you're playing basketball, like, hey, if you're hitting a bunch of shots from three and the other team's taking a bunch of shots inside the arc, like, there is an inherent three is worth more than two. So I think, like, the concept of prioritizing those shots, like, that's been a few years in the making. Like, going back to, like, Warriors era, holy crap, the Warriors really good. Steph Curry's taking all these threes, et cetera, jump shooting teams can't win, all that good stuff. So I think that's where the concept was really first introduced to me in a real way in terms of defining the math, quote unquote. As far as using the term itself, I think that's more like I've probably read that in a Zach Lowe piece. It's like, okay, that makes sense. As far as defining it to a casual, like, I think it's going to be something 3-point focused if I'm trying to break it down to someone that just isn't in the weeds like we are. Just how many more threes or what percentage of threes are you taking compared to your opponent? would probably be the easiest way that I can explain that. Because for me, like, I don't view the math battle as an end-all be-all. And to Steve's point, I don't think anyone should. I think that is that has grown in importance over the past few years after three-point shot has been prioritized. And we've seen, we're seeing what Boston in particular has done with the last couple of seasons. So I think it's rising in importance. I don't think it should be the end-all be-all. For me, like, I feel like I use math battle less frequently than I use possession battle. And maybe that's just me being, like, W-pilled over the past couple of seasons and just seeing teams get beat up on the offensive glass and stuff like that. And watching the Aces in particular, like, clean the defensive glass and also not turn the ball over, but they're also just taking a bunch of threes and stuff. So, like, it's kind of interconnected for me with how I think about this stuff. But, yeah, I think math battle in particular, it's more so, like, threes versus twos if you're just trying to break it down to a casual. And, again, to Steve's point, I don't think you should over-index on that because, ultimately, taking threes isn't the only way that you can win basketball games. And even making threes isn't the only way that you can win basketball games if there's a level of proficiency inside the arc or if you're just forcing a bunch of turnovers. Because we've seen games this year where a team shoots well, but because they've turned the ball over a whole bunch, other team is outscoring them despite having worse efficiency. So it isn't just that, just to bounce off what Steve said there. And we have a couple of questions from Reza. First starts with, from a fan perspective, it really sucks watching our favorite players get old and traded away. We all want the Dirk or Tim Duncan experience and very rarely get it. This needs to be a CBA issue. There has to be a way to manage contracts so our favorite players ride off into the sunset in the same jersey they took over the town in. An idea. At any point, the team and player can agree to exercise the contract sunset off option. 50% of the remaining 2 years left on the contract is exempt from the cap. You can give Jimmy Butler a 3-year extension for $30 million a year, for example, but the last 2 years would be a $15 million per year cap hit. However, from that point on, the player is only eligible for the veteran's minimum. So let's say Jimmy signs the extension and after a year, both parties agree to sunset the contract. Should Jimmy have enough in the tank to continue playing after the contract to sunset, his subsequent contracts are capped at the veteran minimum. That would curtail any front office shenanigans as the player would have to be serious about ending their career with the franchise.
It's a good. Well, no, I was just going to say, you ever heard of Avril Lavigne?
Uh-oh. This should be good.
So much for my happy ending. Like, it's, hey, look, I'm going to let you go first, but.
I see. Like, I think to the heart of the question, it would be, like, this is something that I feel like we've broached on the podcast before, not in terms of finding an actual solution to this. But, like, this isn't a new talking point to where, you know, like when Kobe retired, the contract he got, the Dwayne Wade contract when he ended, you know, Dirk choosing to take less to end his career and stuff. Like, there has long been chatter about players at end of career for franchise. They're super important to, like, we want to pay those guys because they're worth it. And honestly, just worth a whole lot more. We're just operating in a somewhat capped sport. But we can't do that without hindering team building, our team building abilities elsewhere. And, like, trying to find a solution. Again, look at that. I don't think that's a new talking point. As far as this proposal, I think it's an interesting one. I think the cap at the veteran minimum thing is where it's going to get hazy, and less for like team shenanigans and more the player saying, hey, if I'm good, I want to get my money. And like even within this lens, like I guess I'll use Dwayne Wade as an example. He ultimately ended up retiring with Miami. And I'm sure, you know, after the big three and stuff, he still intended there to stay with Miami his whole career. But then contract negotiations broke down and the order of operations of how Miami was handling their offseason when he left Chicago, that broke down. And so what stops, you know, like Jimmy Butler in Miami in this example, hey, let's agree to sunset things. Something breaks down between the two in a year, you know, minute management, game management, roster building, whatever. Something breaks down between the two. And now because you've agreed this contract, you know, the sunset option, now I'm just stuck taking the minimums if things break down. If I don't want to be here anymore and I still want to play. And like my follow-up question would be like, you agree to this option. Are you just not able to be traded? Like, I know the general concept is I'm signing this because I want to retire here. But like, is there a mutual agreement that could be made between the two? If things break down, hey, I want to go elsewhere. I want to be traded. And if so, like, does that take away the minimum contract kind of guideline here? Like, I would just want to hear more about it. I think it's an interesting starting point. And I think, I mean, ultimately, I want to give props to like trying to put some kind of concept to paper on how to accomplish team players riding off with their original teams. Because I think, again, in general, like I would love to see more of that. I do think it's kind of hard to legislate.
Nikias love this idea. Here's a couple things, right? Okay. One, how many of these players are going to exist going forward that are at this one team for a very long time? We just saw Kevin Durant be like, yeah, I cooked. Probably not getting a statue because I didn't stay in one place for a very long time. Like, I don't know how many of those players are going to be eligible. Like, outside of what would be Stephen Curry right now? Giannis, that's it? Luka?
Steph, Giannis, Luka. Those are probably the three, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Shea in a couple of years if he stays there. So I get it. I like it. I like the idea, I like the sentiment. But guys are going to want to get their money as long as they can. You can flip the power too much where, okay, we give you this contract sunset option. We give you this money. We use the money that's not a cap hit to go get someone who replaces you. And now you are in a completely different scenario than when you signed this deal. So I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, let's say maybe an injury happens. And now, okay, you're only worth this now. It becomes very tricky to kind of manage that. Because usually most of the time, the breakdown between teams is either because of contracts, as you mentioned, team success, or just desire to do something else and do something different. You know, sometimes people want to end on their own note. There's no guarantee of a happy ending, especially in sports. So I like the creativity. I don't know.
I dig it. And then the second question. In your last mailbag, you discussed Las Vegas Aces trades. Maybe I watched the game wrong, but it looked to me like Kelsey Plum was getting subbed out during the Liberty series because she was a defensive liability. Isn't this the classic situation where your scoring one, Curry, Brunson, etc., needs to be balanced out by a 3-and-D2, Rajah, Clay, OG, etc.? Do the Aces need a 4 clocking up Asia space? I feel like the scoring one and defensive two is a better fit than two bigs. So I guess circling back to this, because as we talked about like potential Aces things, and I know there was a question about like there was the Kelsey Satu like sign and trade question that we got, and then just general Aces thoughts. Ideally, you don't want a 4 clocking up Asia space, because at that point, why wouldn't you just get a 5 so she wouldn't have to defend fours? Like, I think that's part of like why Kia Stokes has been so valuable, like why she doesn't provide the pure spacing element. Like, she is a really good screener, and ultimately, you know, particularly the season before last, if Kia can defend at an all defense level, at least on a per minute basis, you take a little bit of the wear and tear off Asia. And because Kia has uses as a screener, et cetera, like you can still move her around enough and the offense can still hum at a very high level. So like within the Kelsey Satu dichotomy, like you would once again have to see how real the 3-point shooting from last season is real for Satu. But ultimately, she's just such a dynamic scorer and driver. Like, even if teams try to gap her, like, she can still just puncture that in a way that, like, a traditional non-spacing five can't. So I think the Aces would still take that, considering where their defense was last year. And just adding more of dribble drive juice to the offense would be helpful for them. But as far as the concept of defense, you know, 3-and-D guard next to Kelsey, I think it's complicated within the Aces context because you have Chelsea and Jackie there. And so I guess Jackie would technically be the 3-and-D player, though obviously that is just underrating the complete player that she is. But just working with this kind of concept, like, I think you already have that with Jackie. And so at that point, would you be looking to prioritize Kelsey over Chelsea moving forward? Like, Kelsey is younger, so like I can see why you would do that, but also because of how important Chelsea is to the Aces on both ends of the floor, the playmaking, the switchability, her calling things out defensively, just the general communication. Like, we saw what the Aces looked like last season when Chelsea Gray was out. I don't think the Aces are pressing that particular button. So I don't know. Like, the other option would be, like, if you are able to find a free agent or some kind of trade situation to where you are now you're adding another wing to the room. And now Jackie's like your de facto four, or I guess defensively Chelsea would be your four, but you know what I mean? If it is like if it's Chelsea, Kelsey, Jackie, and insert like legit wing here, not Satu's, kind of both. And you just go really small, because we did see some lineups with those three plus Tiffany Hayes last year in Asia. So like the Aces are sprinkled with that. I don't know if that's something that they would want to do like full time, unless it is the perfect wing to do that, if that makes sense. So I think that's where I would start with this.
I think the Aces are a very unique scenario to where, yes, probably on paper, you would say, hey, we have our one who scored, you know what I mean? But I think that, again, ignores the synergy of that roster, and that Chelsea Gray is just a one who can also score. Mm-hmm. Jackie Young is the defensive person who can also score, and Kelsey Plum is going to get after it defensively and can also score and make plays. So you have this blend where for the majority of the game, you're going to have to deal with if at least one, if not two of these players on the court at the same time. And when they have it going, do you have enough defenders to make this work? You saw the Liberty had to make the moves they had to make sure that in theory, yes, we do have enough to make that work for us. But you saw even in a tough year, a lot of teams did not. They're tough to handle. So I don't know if I would pivot straight to a defender, because sure, synergy might be, you know, a little bit more ideal on paper, but now I don't have to guard this person. Mm-hmm. You give me a help point on a team that traditionally doesn't have many of them. I will take that and run.
Okay. That makes sense. Like, I think ultimately with the Aces, like, it was just such a weird season for them. And I think just broadly speaking, and as the Aces have already made like a front office change, and we'll see what else happens during the offseason, they have to find a balance between we need to improve in very specific areas versus last season was a sign of we're not good enough at X and we need to make major changes. Because I don't know if they need to make major changes. Like, obviously, we'll go with the example again. Like, if Satu Sabally is legitimately available as a free agent and the Wings aren't going to core her for some reason, then, like, yeah, you just take, yeah, you try to sign the top 10, top 12 player and you add that to the room. But, like, outside of something falling in your lap, like, I don't know if the Aces need drastic change more than they need health plus return to shooting form, which I think would kind of balance itself out if you have a full Chelsea year and you get, you know, more catch-shoot opportunities for Kelsey, more catch-shoot opportunities for Jackie, et cetera. But I don't know if they need drastic more than they need health plus return to form and improvement around the margins. Like, I'm still not sure they have to do something drastically different with the roster. And so ultimately, I'm curious to see like where they land on that front, because they, again, I'm speaking into a microphone. They're actually making the big decisions. They may feel like they need to do something drastic to the core or around the core. And if so, like, I want to see what that is and what the thinking behind it is. But like, I don't even know if I'm there yet. You miss Chelsea for half the year and then that shifts Jackie and Kelsey more on ball, which they can do. But obviously that is the most optimal setup for both of them. Asia had to do a ton. Like, I think part of what made Asia's MVP season as special as it was because it was kind of out of necessity, because the offense just wasn't flowing the way it was accustomed to with Chelsea not being there for a large chunk of the season. So like it was just weird. And then you throw in the Olympic run on top of that. It was a lot. So I don't know if they need to overcompensate for like their first non-title season in 3 years, which is absurd to say, but I guess we will see on that front. So to close this out, Steve, can I drop a couple of notes before we get out of here?
What you got?
Because I just apparently cannot read, I had a couple of players I wanted to shout out. There was one in particular that I really wanted to shout out on the last episode of the pod that I did not get to do. And so I did want to give quick hat tips before we got out of here. LaMelo Ball, I have had a whole lot of fun watching that man play basketball. I think the pull-up shooting has been ridiculous for him. He has continued to get downhill a little bit more. I think there's room for more on that front in terms of the drives. But it is encouraging me that he is driving with a little bit more juice. He's getting fouled more. Per clean of the glass, he's being fouled on 12.2% of his shot attempts this year. That would be a career high. That was at 8.6% last year. That was at 5.3%. the year before last. The efficiency as a finisher hasn't really perked up yet. You want to see that improve, but he is getting downhill with a little bit more aggression. He is drawing more fouls. And so if you're able to balance out the foul drawing with better finishing, with the pull-up shooting, with the playmaking, as he can still just wheel the ball wherever he wants to. That makes for a really elite offensive player. And he has gotten off again to a ridiculous start. 28.5 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, shooting 40% from 3 on 12 attempts, which is just absurd. He's making half of his shots inside the arc. So quick shout out to LaMelo Ball. And then Jordan Poole, who I guess similar to Campaign, I would say is getting closer to the shot making slash make the easy play balance that you would want to see from a lead ball handler. It is very early for Jordan Poole.
But, brother, did you mean Cam Thomas?
No. Did I not say Cam Thomas?
You said Campaign.
Darn.
Wrap that thought up, but no, what you mean?
Gosh darn it. Similar to the Cam Thomas note that was made on the last pod, I do feel like Jordan Poole is getting closer to the shot making slash make the easy play balance. Averaging 6 assists per game through his first 4. Again, low sample, but just the reads that he's making. Seeing drop, I can take the pull up or I can lead the dance a little bit. If you do creep up, I'll get rid of it. And there's just been a lot of movement in Washington. It hasn't all been good. It's been cool seeing the cutting perk up. Defensively, if they're not the heaviest nail team in the league defensively, they're certainly up there. Again, that hasn't all been good, as Washington ultimately hasn't had a great defense to start the year. Just a general hat to Jordan Poole and decisions that he's making on the ball. Defensively, he's really been getting after it. He had a lot of deflections, a lot of strips on drives, a lot of strips on post-ups. Like watching the beginning of that Boston game, and he's just, I think it was like 2 or 3 steals within the first 4 minutes of that game. It's like, okay, this is cool, Jordan Poole. One of my things heading into the season for Washington, we did our previews, like, hey, what kind of return to form do we see for Jordan Poole? What kind of growth do we see on either end of the floor for him? And at least through the early goings of the season, he is just playing much better on both ends of the floor. So I did want to quickly salute him, and again, wanted to salute LaMelo. So wanted to close with that. Steve, do you have any basketball thoughts you would like to share? Anything that's popped up over the last couple of days of games?
What you, Nathanos? You saluted LaMelo Ball, Cam Thomas, Jordan Poole in the same week. Was next week Jalen Green?
A lot of pull-ups from Jalen.
I guess I would say salute to Norman Powell. It's been fun to watch him have that consistency for the Clippers. I will once again say Julius Randle is doing good things in Minnesota. You should just watch it. Karl Anthony Towns doing good stuff in New York. You should just watch it. And I think that's about all I got.
All right. Fair enough. Well, with that being the case, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And every Tuesday, we will be on the Old Man of the Three YouTube channel. So check us out there. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe, formerly the JJ Reddit YouTube channel. But come check us out. Every Tuesday, you get the video elements. We're getting played, spliced in, etc. So if that's more of your bag, check us out on YouTube every first episode of the week. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. We're sharing funny tweets in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the description. Create your profile. Come watch some hoops with us. Come hang with some cool people. We got some video game things sprinkled in there as well. But ultimately, it's a safe haven for you to watch hoops and generally just let your hair down. So if you want to have some fun and watch some hoops at the same time, come rock with us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. And with that, we will catch y'all next week on YouTube.
It's November. Go ahead and play that Mariah Carey song.